Well, hello there. This will be 2 weeks of consistency, which is really, really nice. But if there's anything I'm good at, it's being really consistent for 3 months and then not being consistent after that. Actually, it's more like 6 to 8. You know, they always say when you build a habit, it's kind of challenging because you have to get over the hump of forming the habit. Well, for me, I think either my learning phase is really slow or like I just give up on it. I don't know. Because reliably at 6 to 8 months, I'm kind of like, okay, I don't really want to do this anymore. And then I forget about it or life gets busy. You know, now that I think about it, it could also be seasonal where I start projects because I have time. And then once the summer hits, I suddenly don't have time and I want to do everything. And I'm very much a sweet summer child. I am solar powered. I grew several inches when I moved to LA. I was 18. I was sincerely past my growing phase. And I came back home and I was suddenly knocking things over. As in, I would reach for a cup and it would, my arm was a little bit longer than I thought it was. Or I felt taller going into my childhood bedroom, which could have just been the time away from home, but I think was actually that I had grown. And I really do think I'm at my most powerful when I'm charged up by the sun. So, hello. Welcome to the second episode of Waiting to Live. So exciting. I have just returned from a bachelorette trip to Baja del Sur, California del Sur, Baja del, there are so many names for the places that we went. Cabo, technically, as in that's the flight that I took. Then we took a car to a place called Rancho La Venta, which I highly recommend if it is still there when you are listening to this, dear listener. If you ever find yourself in that neck of the woods, I would so go there. Why? At least when I went, there were 6 dogs. There were 6 dogs on site. Benny, a curly-haired white dog. Imagine the crustiest white dog you know, owned by the oldest family. Younger and bigger. There was Oscar, a black and brown dog with floppy ears and a big smile, who barked at you when you were standing, but was your best friend when you were sitting. She did not like tall people. There was also Rocky, our big protector, whom we love. Roy, also my favorite protector, but kind of an idiot. He would routinely show up with cactus spikes just everywhere, in his mouth, on his butt, in his paws. And he had the most beautiful copper rust brown coat with tiger stripes. So cool. And these little pointy ears, and he was very lean. And then we also had sweet Tina, who is a rescue. I just met her this morning. And oh no, one I can't remember, but she was beautiful. I have a video of her and she's just so, so stunning. You know when dogs are just beautiful? Yeah, there's a lot of cute dogs. I would actually argue that all dogs are really cute, but when dogs are actually beautiful, and you wonder how creatures like that can exist, because there's something about them that's just so stunning. It's a beautiful dog. And then lastly, Tony. Tony is my girl. I have now met my spirit sister, and her name is Tony. She is the chunkiest Chihuahua / Terrier mix. We don't know. They're all rescues. And she is so big that if you're behind her and you call her name, she has to turn her whole body. And she will actually prefer to just roll over and look at you. And I've never resonated with a dog more. She's the boss of all the other dogs, despite her tiny, tiny size. She would face off with the donkey. Yeah, you heard me right. There was a donkey. And she was keeping up with the rest of the dogs. She was running around with everybody else, and she apparently, when she was found, was skinny and tiny and scared. And to see her be fat and happy and fearless, I think, is why I have chosen her as my spirit sister and why I resonate with that so much. I just love an underdog story. So there were 6 dogs at this ranch. There was a donkey named Pluto, a horse named Indio, and they were the best of friends. I've never seen a bonded pair like that. Turns out there is a difference between a donkey and a mule, I believe. Yes, I used to think that, this is a bit silly, but I used to think that a mule was just a donkey with a job. Like, he has to pay taxes or haul stuff around, and they give him a different name because he's working. Kind of like how we give cuts of meat a different name when we're serving it versus when it's not dead, I guess. Anyways, I digress. This donkey named I keep on forgetting his name because they almost named him after Pluto the philosopher, or sorry, Plato the philosopher, because his brother was named Aristotle. But Aristotle sadly passed away because of a rattlesnake bite. The first night we went there, the guy, Daniele, who showed us our accommodations, mentioned that he'd found a rattlesnake. So he told us all to be careful. Keep in mind, we had just come from not there. From Canada. And we were not expecting one of the first things he told us was that there would be rattlesnakes on the property. And he went, yeah, you do want to see. And he showed us his bucket with a screw top lid, childproof. And indeed, inside was a little rattlesnake. It was a stunning, stunning place. This bonded pair, they were so cute. And the little casitas that we stayed in, full of spiders. I don't know if anybody else does this, but when I'm home alone, I am a big, big scaredy cat. And maybe it's just because I can be. I'm not quite sure. I am. But then sometimes when you're with friends and they're all scared, you sort of become brave for them. Maybe that's how mothers feel with their kids. But I felt very maternal. And the maternal vibe was that there were spiders, but I had my friends there, so I decided to be nonplussed by the spiders in hopes to inspire a little bit of bravery amongst my friends, although I didn't have spiders above my bed, so I was a little bit more in the clear. I just don't like it when a thing scuttles. If something scary is approaching me, I know I don't really get a say in this, but if I could, my preference, I would prefer it if you're approaching me and you're scary, you maintain the same pace. When things vary in speed in their approach, that's scaredy cat city. That's fear central for me. I don't know what to expect, and I'm very confused. And the unexpected speed change, the scuttling specifically, varied speed scuttling. Wow. Varied speed scuttling. Excellent. Jake Peralta, title of your sex tape, is just scary to me. I if you're already going to be scary and approaching me, that's one thing that I don't like. But if it's going to have to happen, maintain the same speed, please. So, spiders, I will give you a wide berth. I respect you. I respect your people. Please do not come anywhere near me. And if you do, maintain the same space. Sorry, pace, so I can go around you, my good sir. Excuse you. So that's on the spiders and my life and things that I'm scared of. But this little casita was amazing. I've actually just come back today and just taken a shower, so I don't have any more dust on me from the farm, the ranch. It was not a farm, it was a ranch. And also a winery. It's more of a winery than anything. And I was just thinking, because I live alone, that I won't have anybody to sort of come home to and chat with, which I do think, honestly, better to be alone, I guess, and happy. And yeah, I'm chatting here with you, so it's really nice. But I do think there's something even more sad about feeling alone when you are with somebody. And so I thought, you know, it might be nice to have somebody. And then I quickly, very quickly, replaced that thought with, yeah, but they have to be the right person, because I've definitely had people I've come home to where I was really excited to share my adventures, and they just weren't in the mood to hear it and didn't want to hear about my adventure or ask any questions about it. And honestly, just didn't really care. And that is a lonelier, much lonelier, devastating feeling than coming home to be by yourself and honestly getting to do kind of whatever you want, which is nice. I don't have to do the laundry right away. I don't have to put away all my clothes right away, although I probably will do a little bit of tidying. And I had a friend who came over whilst I was away, a neighbor who has my keys, whom I adore, and put flowers in my flower pot for me. I have a few planters outside, and I came back and there's this gorgeous little flower set up in them. And I am a little bit embarrassed to say, but to this day, I have never actually filled my own flower pots. The last time that they were filled with flowers, my best friend was visiting, and I'd mentioned that I didn't like them empty, and he came and filled them for me with beautiful flowers. And you know what? I think this is the year I'm going to try and keep them full of things that are alive and beautiful, because I like having beauty in my life. And I'm going to invite that in as much as possible. Why would I not? Why would I deny myself the finer things? So that was a lot of this Baja. Where was I? California? No. It was definitely Cabo. It was definitely Mexico. Not to say I don't know where it was geographically. It's just confusing because the nomenclature is different. The nomenclature? No. The naming of it is different. And how do I put this? Not necessarily the most intuitive, especially because names of things are changing with the current political climate. Things are being renamed. The Gulf of Cortez is, or the Sea of Cortez is now called the Gulf of Mexico or America? I can't remember. And we went to a few different places. Todos Santos was one. Excellent place if you want to buy some knickknacks. I bought a gorgeous blanket there and was able to haggle successfully because I didn't try. I have tried to haggle several times in my life and it's never really worked out, because I think it's kind of like how people understand when you go in wanting something from a conversation. I lived in LA for several years, and when people want things from you, it's just kind of a slimy feeling versus it happening organically, and I never knew how to engineer that organically. Turns out you just have to be transparent. And I found this beautiful blanket, and I was told it was going to be 1,200 pesos, and I went, that's way out of budget. I don't even have that much money in my wallet. And as I was going to put it back, the shopkeeper asked me, you know, how much would you be willing to pay for it? And I looked at him and I went, I'm so sorry, but probably nothing near what it's worth to even make it at this point, because the craftsmanship was really beautiful and it wasn't just your run-of-the-mill sort of Mexican blanket that might be made in a factory. I'm not quite sure, but you know, everybody has one, and you've probably dated somebody in college who had one, or it was like a tapestry that was pinned up on the wall poorly. And it wasn't that, it was colors I've never seen before, very much in my Easter color palette, which is my favorite sort of selection of colors. It's hard to say I have just one. Actually, it would probably be lavender right now, but I love the colors of a pink, purple, yellow sunset. You ever seen one of those where it's just the sky is on fire, and then as the sun is setting, you get all these hues of warm pink and purple, and I love that color sunset. There's something about it that makes me feel oddly really connected to the stars. Like, if you've ever heard the quote, "We are all made of star stuff," it very much makes me feel like I'm a part of the universe as a whole, because that sunset exists in the same timeline as me, and I witnessed it. I don't know. There's something really poetic about that, I guess, that I really, really enjoy. And so I love those colors, and I found a blanket in exactly those colors, a bit more pastel. And the man responded with, "Well, I can go down to, you know, 1,000. And I went, "Give me a second to do this calculation," as I was calculating how many dollars that was and how many Canadian dollars that was. And I was typing this into my phone, asking for his patience. And my friends were in another store, and I guess I was just still got that city girl in me, and I wanted to be efficient. And he saw me, I guess, stressing a little bit, and he looked at me and he went, well, he didn't go Allison because he didn't know my name at the time, but he went, "Take your time, no rush. We're on Todos Santos time. It's not even Cabo time. Take your time." And I went, "Muchas gracias." And he went, "¿Hablas español?" And I responded, "Un poquito, no está bien." To which he responded, "No, está bien. ¿Cómo te llamas?" And in my head, I thought to myself, "Hey, I know that one." And I said, "Me llamo Alex." And he went, "Ah, me llamo." I'm pretty sure his name was Jose. And we spoke a little bit in Spanish. And I said, "Me encanto," or "encanta." And then he taught me sort of better ways to respond to "nice to meet you," or how do you say, how do you respond to, or how do you, yeah, how do you say "nice to meet you" after someone's introduced themselves to you. And we had a nice little chat about Canada and where he was from and where his family was from. And after that he went, "You know what, I can go down to 900. Don't tell anybody else, but because you speak Spanish." I think, honestly, I could have gotten him down to 800, but at 900 it was something that I could actually afford and felt like a decent price for something that is going to be a memory and, you know, I will have in my living room that will provide me with warmth and my friends with warmth, and I'll have a story behind it and a memory to keep. And I think that to me is quite valuable. And he was really lovely, and I told him, you've just made a Canadian girl very, very happy," as I strolled away with my triumphant purchase. And that was the first time I've ever successfully haggled. And it was just me typing in pesos to dollars in my phone and having it convert for me, I guess. And I'm extremely proud. But I do think that just being honest with people really helps, and especially there, I guess, being trilingual, quadlingual. I'm actually not quite sure what it's called when you can speak more than three languages. Polyglottic at that point, polyglottic, or just a polyglot. I don't think polyglottic is a word. But I speak a little bit of Spanish because I studied it when I went to school in LA. And I learned how to speak Spanish. I took 3 years of Spanish instead of what I could have been probably 1 year of French, because I was so done with French at that point. If you've ever studied a language in a school setting that's not your mother tongue, you'll know how utterly grueling it is. To this day, I really think that the best way to learn language is just to immerse yourself in it and watch TV. Watch popular media, watch things, listen to music, listen to podcasts, I guess, if that's more your speed, but embed yourself in culture as much as possible, because you'll be able to get a sense of what the isms are and how vocabulary is used in everyday language. And the basics are nice to learn in a classroom setting, but when you get a bit more advanced, which I was with French, it was just, what I realized was that the written version of it, which I was killing myself to try and learn, was actually not as important, because I very rarely am actually writing in French. I'm only speaking in French when I'm visiting places. And so futur, passé, proche, or whatever it is, doesn't really matter as much. And there's a lot of verb tenses that when you speak them aloud, they actually sound exactly the same. And so you don't have to learn them in as much detail, because the silent extra letters cannot be heard when you speak it out loud. For example, in French, there's this, to my memory, this verb tense where you can talk about things that you are going to do, but say I'm telling a story about how I'm going to the store tomorrow and I'm planning to pick up rice, and then after that bread, and after that I will go get celery, but before I go to the store I'll probably have to pick up gas. There are verb tenses sort of for things that happen in the future but happen before other things, I think. And I just remember banging my head against the wall trying to learn this vocabulary, because I was so, so done with it. And so I could have taken 1 year of French, and I took 3 years of Spanish instead. And that's resulted in me being able to haggle a blanket. So, you know what? It was a good investment. And I do enjoy Spanish. I think I just didn't like my teacher, maybe. He said entonces a lot, and I didn't like that. I've learned that people say chicos a lot, maybe just in Baja or in Cabo, but it means guys. Chicos is just guys. Oh, pardon me, I'm going to cough. And yeah, I'm learning a lot about the ability to connect with other people and how much that is informed by language. And so I speak Spanish a little bit. I learned English, and I speak French pretty passably, actually. I think it's because of my ability to mimic, and that my command of the language itself in terms of vocabulary, verb tenses, getting things right, is not great. But I also speak Cantonese. That's the first language I actually ever learned. So technically my mother tongue, or my first language, if we're calling the first language you ever learned, it would have been Cantonese. And I think also because I was in choir, I just learned how to make all these weird mouth sounds, you know, the back of the throat, the rolling of the R's, the sh's and r's in Mandarin, even though I can't speak Mandarin, but just the sounds. I think I was really able to find good ways to mimic what I hear. So pretty much any language, almost any language. Arabic is kind of hard still. I can actually speak for the most part, or at least mimic, because I am able to make those weird mouth sounds. So I really enjoy learning key phrases and then just using them in the same context. For example, I learned je vous en prie in French, which is contextually happened to me as I was exiting a bathroom and someone was in my way, and we did that little dance where we both go the same way and we giggled. And she went, je vous en prie. So I presume it's sort of an excuse me or my bad or like oopsie or like, oh, thank you. And à la portée means to go. So if you want a coffee or something to go or a croissant or a baguette, you can go un croissant à la portée. Un pain au chocolat à la portée. And that means just this thing to go. In Cantonese, it's hang kai, which means to walk, technically to walk the street, but that's how you say to go, at least in Hong Kong. So you would say, like, if you want, like, a milk tea, you go, yokolai ta hang kai. Funnily enough, when you're outside of Hong Kong, if you want an iced tea, Hong Kong style, you go, I want a Hong Kong style iced tea, or in Cantonese, you say gong sik, which is gong, like Hong Kong style, sik style, lai ta, or dong ling ta, which is my favorite, gong sik dong ling ta. A fresh one of those is my favorite drink on the whole planet. Oh my gosh, I grew up with them. It's really just simple syrup, brewed Lipton tea, you know that Lipton yellow label tea? Heavily brewed yellow Lipton label tea. It's, I can't remember the ratio, but it's a lot. And then some simple syrup and fresh lemon juice and then a couple of slices of fresh lemon and that shit. Oh my goodness. I love that drink so much. And me and my brother actually grew up on it, going to the Cha Chan Tangs, which is tea houses as kids. And I remember always asking Stanley, who was the owner of the Cha Chan Tang that we preferred to go to, for a little, I guess what would come in a little creamer tin, you know, those creamer jugs with the little handle that are made of metal that usually come with cream, obviously. He would fill it with simple syrup for us, and we would add it to our drinks. And, you know, kids, they freaking love sugar, and so it would be a sort of race between me and my brother to see who could get to it first so we could pour more sugar in our very sugary lemon teas. And there's something very nostalgic about that drink. And you can buy it boxed in like a Vita pack or a lemon tea pack, but I prefer the fresh one. It's just hard to make and keep. And it is my favorite drink. So Dongling Cha. I also love a yin yang, which is short for, or not short, but Hong Kong, Cantonese for a yin and yang drink, which is, I believe, half milk tea, heavily brewed tea with a milk that makes it taste sort of matte. I don't know how else to explain it, except if you've ever had it, you will know what I mean. And then I believe there's coffee in it as well. And that is also extremely good. It gives me tummy troubles every time, but it's so worth it. So those are my two favorite Hong Kong style drinks. I also love a mango lassi. Now we're just going on the alley drinks, you know, tour of the world. I love a mango lassi if I can get my hands on one. There's something just so delicious about mango lassi. I do enjoy mango juice as well, but it's kind of more with pho. I don't know. When I was a kid, there was this place called Lemongrass that I went to religiously with my family. And I would always get a bowl of pho and a mango juice. It was my favorite thing. And they knew my order at that point. I do love being a regular in a restaurant. I just find it so fun. And I am endeavoring to do that as an adult because I don't know. I'm just not able to go to places enough, although I think that when I get busy or I'm pouring a lot of my time and energy into something, I tend to sort of retreat from the world a little bit. And I definitely did that for a while, and so I'm eager to return and go back to my local favorite places and become, you know, a regular again. So I think that's something that I would like to do. But a mango lassi, a yin yang, and a Hong Kong style iced tea are my favorite beverages. I'm trying to think if I had anything sort of note while I was in Cabo or Baja del Sur or Todos Santos, but I can't. I had some Topo Chico, I don't know if anyone's ever had those before. They're similar to White Claws, but so much better. I was on a boat one day. We went to the island Espiritu, and it was a bring your own alcohol situation. So I brought a couple cans of Topo Chico, and it was a coveted drink. Everyone on this boat was asking for Topo Chicos, and the boat keepers, boat driver, tour guide leads, the tour guides were saying, had to step in and say, no, they belong to this woman. You can't have them. And so the Topo Chicos were mine, but man, if you could ever get your hands on some of those, they are dangerous. I had a really good time that day. We were on a boat. We swam with sea lions. Ugh, I saw a whale, or at least the tail of a whale, and saw fish. I went swimming. I had ceviche on a beach. I charged up in the sun. I was on a really, really, really rocky boat that it was so choppy. My goodness. We were just... Imagine that feeling when you're in a roller coaster and it drops and your tummy does a few flips. It was that, but for an hour maybe. And it was, at first it was really fun, and then it got scary. And then I had a Topo Chico and it was fun again. Sometimes when I get nervous like that, I just lean into it because it's hard to fight the feeling. If I've learned anything as an adult, obviously feelings that keep you from being your best self, I think. Maybe you don't have to fight them, but definitely take some time aside to safely process them if you can. And I'm learning that it's much better for me to process my feelings immediately than bottling them up, because they just get in the way. And I, as a person who likes to feel my way through my life, I think fear, your emotions, it's all telling you something. You know, it's all part of you trying to communicate with you, you know. So I think it's important to listen, and listen with a discerning ear, because it's not always true. Fear does not always have to be true. I was not going to, I guess, go overboard, and even if I did, I was wearing a life jacket, totally fine. But the fear of falling, I guess, was interesting, especially on this boat. And I was really glad to just have a little Topo Chico and lean into it and just pretend like it was a roller coaster of sea, of water. And it was just such a beautiful day, and the place again that we were staying in was such a beautiful respite to go back to. And I'm not sure if this is just something that happens to people as you sort of get older, but I'm really into birding now. Secrets out, I do love a good bird, and I just love identifying them and listening to them. I think that the best thing that I've done is pick up birding as a hobby, because it forces you to be really present with everything and to be genuinely in the moment. If anyone's ever heard of Merlin Bird ID, leave a comment, I guess, or tell me, because it's my favorite app. It's basically Pokemon Go, but for birds. This is how it works. You download Merlin Bird ID, and the next time you hear a bird, you press record, and it will identify the birds for you. So it's essentially Shazam for birds, and it will help you identify the bird. And when you can correctly identify it, you go, this is my bird, and you can add it to your bird list. And then the information gets added to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology research base, and you have just contributed to research. Many and much of birding data I've discovered is actually provided by communities, because there's so many birds and researchers can't be everywhere. So they rely a lot on communities to get sound recordings of birds and to provide their location. So you do have to tell the app where you are, but unlike most apps that farm your data for capitalism. This one farms it for research of birds, and I want everyone to get Merlin Bird ID and for us all to sit quietly in the woods and just listen to the bird song and let it orchestrate around you. So I did that this morning. I laid out in the sun as everyone was getting up, and I put on my bird app, and I watched it identify all the birds, or I listened to it identify all the birds, and then I watched the birds fly by. And the beautiful thing about birding is almost no matter where you are in the world, you probably have a bird near you, or several birds. They're just bird song pretty much everywhere. They're the rats in the sky. And I think that birding is a really fun hobby that usually is only a good thing, because it's like scavenger hunting, except they're alive, I guess, and you don't get to keep it, except I guess scavenger hunting is fun because you get to keep it. Although for me, the best part of a scavenger hunt is the journey, not the destination. Like an Easter egg hunt, the most fun part is looking for the treasure, for the chocolate eggs. Not so much the eating of them, because I prefer Cadbury chocolate eggs. The foil wrapped ones are good, especially if they're Lindor, which is one of my favorite chocolates. I think Ferrero Rocher's might be my favorite chocolate of all time. Lindor's are a close second. And I really think that Easter egg hunting, the best part is the hunt itself. It's the discovery, it's the looking for things. So I feel like maybe birding is a similar energy. I would like to get good at identifying them as well, and then maybe I really want to get a cute pair of binoculars and go looking for them. I have a few bird books. The Dumb Birds of the Stupid Fucking World, or Stupid Fucking Birds of the Dumb World, some combination of those words. But I really enjoy how that specific artist talks about birds and draws them. And I also bought a journal intending to sketch some birds that I see, even though I'm bad at sketching. I am also realizing when you get older that you don't have to be good at your hobby, which is so freeing. When I was a kid, I was in so many programs, sports, arts, music. I did not have time to get into trouble because I did not have time, period, as a kid. And whilst I appreciate all of those experiences, I definitely felt pressure to be good at whatever the thing was. And now that I'm an adult, I really feel like there's no course to take. There's no levels to graduate to. There's no anything really. There's just skills to learn and new things to discover and a curious mind that can be curious, you know, and learn. So I really do love that as an adult, people care less and less about what you are good at when it comes to hobbies, and they're just happy to share that hobby with you. At least most. I think intramural sports are a good one. Semi-competitive sports are not. But I really like birding. And I was so, so happy to sit and enjoy the sounds of birds and bird song. I think it's a nice, calming hobby to have. Oh, and there's a siren. I don't know if you can hear that. You probably can. It's a pretty good microphone. It's not something I've heard in quite a while, actually, because I was not anywhere near a big city. I do think there's something really lovely about a small town or smaller towns and the community aspect of people really taking the time to look each other in the eye and say hello and actually care about what your response is. I think we're quite, I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but I guess concerned with our own lives in the city, because there's so much stimulus all the time that we have trouble checking in on other people, or we don't have much left in the cup to even offer to other people. And a value that I was brought up on is kindness. And I think that I found it, maybe it was because I was on vacation, but I definitely found it a bit easier to be kind when I was there just because I had a bit more in my cup. Also, the place that we were at provided breakfast, and this is not your average run-of-the-mill motel breakfast with, you know, a pancake machine that has an okay button for your okay pancakes or six saran wrapped muffins of equal varying degrees of middling. This was a full home cooked breakfast every day with fresh fruit and coffee and omelets and bacon. Oh my goodness. My love language is acts of service, and I have trouble actually not falling in love with people who cook for me because I think it's such an act of love is to feed the people that you love. And I'm not a great cook, and I will do it. I don't love it. But when people cook for me, I feel extremely well loved. And when I'm enjoying cooking that isn't my own, it's such a warm, fuzzy feeling. And I'm also nourished. I just love it. So to have a home-cooked meal that you can tell was made with a lot of care was just so lovely. And this morning we had, honestly, the yogurt with blueberries and honey. Something about the honey is really good. It just is bussin'. It's so good. And I really, really loved this morning's breakfast. And then it was huevos rancheros. A bunch of beans and avocado and egg and cheese. I'm extremely gassy now, having been on a plane and being full of beans. Ooh, I also had a Ferrero Rocher cake that we got in... Honestly, I do not remember the little city that we were in, but it was so lovely. And I just... it was divine. So I've had a really good day of eating, but I'm extremely gassy. Apologies if you've heard me tootin' this whole episode. Also, I guess you're welcome for sharing this intimate moment with me. You're welcome. I'm trying to change the way that I speak about myself to be more kind. Not excusing, obviously, rude or bad behavior, but instead of saying, you know, I am so stupid, why did I do that? Actually, it's something that my friend Anna will be on me about. She'll go, what did you say about my friend? And she'll pull her fist back. Obviously, she would never hit me, but the threat is there. And I have to reword what I have just said to myself. And I have another friend, coincidentally, with the same name, who hates that sort of thing. And I try not to do it around her because I think it makes her really upset. But I have found it made a really, really big difference in my life when I started speaking kindly to myself. And, you know, I still have negative self-talk every now and then and in my head quite a bit. But at least out loud or when I notice it, I do try to flag it because I deserve better, you know? When I do make mistakes, it's not because I intended to do it. It's because, or I was stupid or being an idiot. It's usually because I was tired or hungry or a bit clumsy because I was distracted. I very rarely make mistakes on purpose because I choose to be somebody who is intentional and that takes a lot of work. And so I think to honor that by being kind to myself is actually maybe a good thing. And I really appreciate my friend Anna for that. So you're welcome for the intimate moments of all of the sounds of hanging out with me on this lovely evening that I've just gotten back from a big trip. It's now getting pretty late, so I think I'm going to call it an episode now. And I will probably schedule this to release on, what was it, Thursday or Friday? So that I can have a bit more time to record some more episodes and get on a consistent schedule. But this was lovely. Again, this is Waiting to Live, and I'm your host, Allie. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And as always, drink lots of water, sleep well, and don't forget to tell the people you love them. All right. Good night.